From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. In the 7 years since the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, billions of dollars have been paid out in settlements and spent on studies looking at the far-reaching environmental impact of the 210 million gallons of oil that spewed into Gulf waters. Today, we'll take a look at what it's done to marine life and the water itself with the scientists doing this research about the spill's lasting impact. We'll also discuss what researchers say oil companies and regulators are and are not doing to keep this from happening again. Plus, what does it take to be a 911 dispatcher receiving breathless, desperate calls for help from people in situations they never dreamed might happen to them? It's a job that requires training, patience, people skills, and an agile mind. We'll talk with Collier County's Communications Center supervisor about the new 911 center and the search for a few good dispatchers to join that team. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. 911, they are the three digits we've been trained to know only to call in case of an emergency. Usually the people calling in are scared, panicked, and desperately in need of help. Do you ever think of who's on the other end of that line? In Collier County, the Emergency Dispatch Center recently got an upgrade, and there are 15 positions for dispatchers available right now. But what does it take to answer those calls? We're joined by Michael McLaughlin, the supervisor of Collier County Communications Center. Thanks for coming in to talk with us today.
It is an honor to be with you today.
Thanks. We're talking about the newly upgraded Collier County Dispatch Center and the job of a 911 dispatcher. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, tell me a little bit about this new call center that you got. How's it set up? How many people work there? How many calls do you get? Things like that.
The old center was a glorified living room where we used to be, but about 7 years ago now, we basically are the ESC building on Lely Cultural Boulevard. It's a huge, expansive facility that can fit about 30, 35 people, but more importantly, the technology has just been rapidly expanding on basically a weekly basis.
So tell me about that technology. What do you know about a caller even before you've answered the phone?
Well, it's all according to whether they call a landline or on a cell phone. A landline gives us a real great snapshot of where they are, their phone number, who they are, whereas cell phones are not completely perfect, but they're moving into a direction where we're getting more definite locations for the callers.
But a lot of people don't have landlines anymore. I mean,
right.
I don't have a landline at my house.
No, I don't either. Originally, there were phase ones, and we would just basically get longitudes and latitudes, but we have phase two now, which is in cell phone speak, is basically gives us a pretty good idea of where people are. And we do have technologies that are helping us, like mapping systems that are pinpointing. But, there is always a little bit of a margin of error, and we work really hard to pinpoint where a person is.
Is it a little bit easier because we don't have a whole lot of high rises down here?
That's a good question.
Because I know when I use Google Maps and I'm in Manhattan, it can never find me.
That's a good point. I'm from the Boston area, so I absolutely know what you're talking about. You have to remember that Collier County is the size of Rhode Island. It is a huge, and we have areas out in the Everglades. So to actually pinpoint, we try to be within meters. But really the technology that's coming about in the next few years is really going to just nail it for responders to get to the place where they need to be.
Yeah. Is it possible for someone to text 911?
Yes. And in fact, we are one of the few, if only, counties right now that are accepting text to 911s. It's difficult. It's trying because of the hesitation between a person texting you and getting that kind of response that you need to get to help a person out.
Well, it takes a while to type.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're all thumbs like me.
Yeah. Fat fingers. But there are situations, though, where people don't want to be heard.
That's true. It is much more effective if they give us a call, though. We can get more information. And really, a job of a 911 dispatcher, we're part sociologists, part psychologists. We wear many hats when we have to talk to somebody and really get the most out of them so we can help them.
Well, you're getting them at probably one of the most trying periods of their life, like the most.
It is. Only 1-3% of the population will ever call 911 once in their life. And we get like 565,000 calls a year. So it's pressing. It's daunting at times. And really, the person that works in 911 is a special breed.
So what kind of training does somebody working in 911 get?
The training is so extensive. We get 12 weeks of training just to go on phones. That's not counting radio or doing the various other jobs that we do in dispatch. The 12 weeks are immersive training in the classroom. And there is just so much training that goes on in the room, and you're not allowed to go 10-8, which is a code we use for being in service and ready to go. Everything is done in codes and in signals. It's kind of a language of its own.
Well, like the police codes.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So, like, do you have to know how to do CPR? Or
oh,
be
yes.
able to walk somebody through
yes.
doing CPR?
We have protocols, like any, like you would figure we would. We have ProQA, which allows us to go through medical procedures to find out exactly what a person needs. And even when we're talking to, you know, we have the regulars that call, but, you know, anyone who's called for the first time in their life, our job is to put them into a state of mind where they're feeling relaxed enough because we get. People freak out a little bit, as you might expect.
Well, yeah, you freak
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
So you said you have regulars. Who are your regulars?
Well, I mean, we recently lost a gentleman by the name of Mr. Thompson, and he called about 300 times a year. He was a fine man, was very good to the dispatchers, but there are people that will call for virtually anything, which can tie up the lines. But on the flip end, once in a while, we get a nugget that will help the deputies and fire and EMS do their job better.
Like I saw some shady-looking character.
Oh, yes, yeah. yes. And the funny thing is, in our county, virtually anyone who calls is going to get a deputy. If someone calls and hangs up, it creates a little stress for us because we have to recall the person, meanwhile sending a deputy to that location because you never know if there was some kind of domestic disturbance or the various other things that could be happening.
What percent of calls do you think you would say are domestic disturbances?
It's a high percentage. I'm not going to say about 10%, 8% to 10%, somewhere around there. And they're very disturbing. They're tough to take. And it's the training that we get, though, enables us to, first of all, like I said, be a psychologist, a sociologist, just to get the information that we need. All we need is really one question answered. What is the address of your emergency? If you give us that key fact, which a lot of people can't do in times of stress, then we're going to get the help they need.
So you don't – when somebody calls from a landline, you'll have their address, right?
Absolutely.
But if they have a cell phone, you're trying to do geolocation, but if
yes.
they can give you the address, that's
yes.
helpful.
Yes. I mean, we just had a company come in today called Rapid SOS, and it's basically – they're working with phone companies and carriers and local municipalities to try to work on actually having it on – I don't want to name any brands, but you know the typical phones that we buy – actually having it built in within the phone structure with all information from a person who calls.
Like a 911 app.
Yeah. It's
kind of.
More than an app. It's going to be built in, embedded into the phone, and hopefully in the future that will happen.
Yeah. So – and you mentioned that they have to be an effective communicator. They have to be well-spoken. Do you have anybody that speaks other languages?
Oh, yes. And we also have the use of Language Line and Devoyance, which is a company that I've had calls from Lithuania. Lithuanian. I mean, I'm not fluent in Lithuanian, unfortunately.
No.
But, yes, we have Spanish speakers that work there and obviously some Creole.
And part of that sociologist-psychologist thing, you hear these stories that you know, you read on, you know, mm-hmm. viral things where someone calls about a domestic situation and they ask for a pizza. The operator says stuff like, oh, you know, you just called 911. Yes, and I'd like pepperoni on that, sort of speaking in code with the dispatcher. Do you train your dispatchers
yes.
to kind of decode these things?
Especially in a domestic situation where a person has the combatant next to her, we will do close-ended questions basically with a yes or I'll say – you know, say the number 15 if it's a yes. Or saying, you know, come up with your best friend's name instead of sounding like they're talking to someone from 911.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just hard to get people to walk through that kind of thing, especially when they're being threatened and you can hear it.
It's incredible. There's a thing called freak and refreak, and we are trained with a thing called repetitive persistence to bring a person down. They'll immediately do a freak, and we can bring them down, but we know that we're going to get a bounce back. And it's just so upsetting because the stress – inside the voices. And funny thing is, obviously, on our end, there's some stress too, but we have to factor in our training and all the things that we learn too.
So when you're looking at a new recruit, I guess I would mm-hmm. call it, I mean, when you're looking at a new person, do you give them that training after they're hired or do they come mm-hmm. to you with training?
No, we come in, hire them, and put them through the immersive training that I mentioned before. They have to be able to multitask. Multitasking is, I mean, I'm one of the older people in the room, so I'm kind of old school, but some of the young people can do 4, 5, 6 things at once, and those are the people that we're looking for.
Yeah, it's just I just can't imagine not knowing who's going to be on that line and what they're going to say.
It's funny you say that because when the 911 calls in, there is a pre-recorded message. It'll say, what's the address of your emergency, and say 911. In that split second before the end of the beep to that voice, there is some anticipation on the count of our end. And
no matter how long you've been doing it.
Oh, it's never ending because you don't know what you're going to get on the other end.
Do you ever get people that go through the training and then kind of they're just like, I can't do this?
It's sad because we do everything in our power to make them a great dispatcher. It's a science and it's a little bit of an art too.
Well, it's also emotional.
Oh, it is emotional every day. And the best dispatchers are the ones that can leave the building, put everything in a big ball, you know, and not think about anything. Because the minute you start unraveling that ball and go home, you're bringing it home with you. And unfortunately, you just can't survive. We have a life expectancy of a 911 dispatcher of only 3.5 to 4 years to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a heady job.
Yeah, but we are talking about 911 dispatchers and what it takes to do that job with the voice on the other end of the phone line, Michael McLaughlin, who supervises Collier County's Communication Center. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So I wanted to ask you a question. When someone calls 911 with an emergency, why does the operator always say, stay on the line?
Oh, why do they? Because we need them to stay in the line for a number of reasons.
But what if you're like freaking out and you're trying to help somebody that's having a heart attack?
It's a fine line because we'd like to give the CPR instructions that are also important to save some lives. We want to keep them in a steady position so that when the first responders show up, first of all, they can be found. And, second of all, to be aware that we're going to give them instructions maybe to help save a life.
Yeah, especially if they start running down the street, if they're invading somebody.
Well, we have some anecdotes for sure in that office of ours.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is there any – you mentioned that you have to kind of put it in a ball and leave it there and you can't take those emotions home with you. Is there ever an instance or a situation in which you follow up after the 911 call to find out how things hashed out after the police got there?
It's funny you mention it. One of the most difficult things for us as dispatchers is that we begin the call, we get it rolling, but a lot of times we just don't find out the results. It's extremely frustrating to us.
Yeah, there's no closure there.
Right. But deputies, fire, and EMS personnel, if you give them a call, there's HIPAA laws and all the things that we have to deal with, but they'll generally let us know if the outcome was either good or bad. And, there's a little bit of both, unfortunately.
Yeah. The moments between calling 911 in an emergency and the moment that the first responder arrives can seem like an eternity for the person that's waiting.
Yes.
But it's actually a pretty short period of time most of the time. Is there like an average, I don't want to say wait time, but is there an average
amount
of time?
It's all according to, because we're broken down into districts. Everglades, for instance, it may take 25 minutes for a deputy to get there because we're talking 30 miles of driving. So it's a little different from where I was brought up, where everything was condensed and close. But on the most part, we're out. We're getting that call out within a minute, minute and a half. I mean, we work it hard to get it out as quickly as possible with as much information and descriptors as we can. Everything we do for two people, the public and also for our first responders to keep them safe so they can go home to see their families.
Do you ever get in a situation where you're talking to someone on 911 and you're like, get somebody there, and they go scrambling there and it turns out to be nothing?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
But, I mean, did they ever say, well, why did you send us? Did they ever come back at you?
Like I said, if someone calls 911, see, everyone has a different perception of what an emergency is. And that was the hardest thing for me to learn. I would think, literally, my finger would be cut off before I called 911.
Yeah.
Not the case for most people. An emergency for one person is different from an emergency for another.
There's your psychology training.
That's the psychology.
Yeah, that you have to have. So are there things that people can do while they're in that waiting hovercraft zone while they're waiting for the first responder to get there that they can make things easier?
I would say if it has to do with a medical issue, just comfort the person that you're with. Use the abilities that we have and calm down the person because, believe it or not, it's a two-way street. We try to calm them down and hopefully they'll calm the patient down.
And then what can a caller into 911 do to make your job easier? Lead with the address.
Don't hang up. Just don't hang up. Stay on the line. Let us verify an address. Let us verify a phone number so we don't have to redo our work. With the staffing the way it is, it's even more imperative that they stay on the line so we can get the information we need in case they call again.
So the thing that you would ask the populace, all the mm-hmm. citizens of the world, if you call 911,
mm-hmm.
stay on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us your address.
Absolutely, because we won't have to make a recall. And second of all, we will be able to verify for the next time that they do call where they are and we can help them.
So what's Collier County's current staffing situation? What are the work shifts like?
We have 12-hour shifts, 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., 5 p.m. to 5 a.m., mostly 12s. We work 3.5 days a week, but there's a lot of overtime available, and we basically need people to work overtime. Luckily, our esteemed first responders out on the road, especially the sheriffs, will work part-time and help us. And we have I'm speaking for Collier County Sheriff's Office, but I'm also speaking for Southwest Florida. Our first responders are the best, none other. And they care. They come up to the center to help when they can, knowing full well what we go through on a daily basis.
Well, it's kind of nice for them to get that kind of experience so that they aren't sitting there in their part of the world
right.
looking at your part of the world and not having
right.
an understanding of
and
what
you do.
And
we do ride-along so we can see their perspective also. And having them in the room gives us the ability to get legal advice instead of sending a deputy out to help.
Yeah. Is this a job you would suggest for people?
Yes, absolutely. I worked in radio for 20 years before I came here, and I thought broadcasting was great. Well, I'm kind of broadcasting too. Like you, I have to be inquisitive to my guest. The difference is that I can't see face-to-face with a person, so I have to listen to face value to every call. Every call is face value, and you have to treat it as such.
Why do you think it's so hard to staff?
It's a stressful job for most people. And the ability, like I said, to leave it in the room when you go. And honestly, the training is immense. We have an incredible training and technical department. We're a beta testing center. We're one of, I believe, one out of, I don't know how many, there's 258 agencies. I think we're one of 13 that's been triply accredited. So we feel professional. They train us to be professional, and we have to deliver as professionals. And never forget the human side, because we treat everyone like family, because maybe one of our family will be calling.
So, yeah, you never know. What is the most predominant call that you get?
Disturbances are huge. We get a lot of medical calls, obviously. We get a lot of people because the slogan that Sheriff Rambos believes in is see it, say it, and call it in. It starts from the top, the quality of the sheriff's office. And one thing you see something, call it in, and suspicious incidents are everywhere. It can be anybody. It could be someone you're not used to seeing on the street. Maybe someone's making a move to a window or something. People are vigilant in this day and age.
Yeah, and you get a lot of, the demographics being a little bit older, kind of looking at checking out what their neighbors are doing, what's going on over there.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. I'm going to leave that one alone.
Well, I do want to ask you, because you mentioned anecdotally that there are, stories. What is, without naming names or getting anybody in trouble, give me a wacky story. What's
give you
a funny one?
A good one, and I can give you
a life-saving one, too. Those are great.
Well, we have a gentleman who, by the way, was just named the Florida Sheriff's Office Dispatcher of the Year. His name is Richard Swink. And let me just tell you the call that he took. Single-engine plane crashes into the Everglades upside down. The guy has broken femur. He's really hurt. He can't do anything but call us. He is dying on the phone. Richard Swing kept him on the phone for an hour and 45 minutes while he's almost losing consciousness. And we didn't have any kind of technological ability there because it was in the middle of nowhere. We got a helicopter up. He hovered over the vehicle. The person on the phone talked to Richard. Richard was next to a radio person. The radio person called the responder, and the responder was there in 5 minutes. Saved the guy's life. 2 years later, he comes in. It was a very emotional moment for us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
All right. Funny story. Thanksgiving will get you every time.
Thanksgiving.
4 years ago, 5 years ago, a lady calls in.
Turkey on fire?
Worse than that. Goes in, is trying to get the gizzards out of a turkey, sticks her hand in the turkey. The wire that comes across it, she gets her finger stuck. Her husband calls. Now, there might have been some refreshments imbibed beforehand. She is screaming in the background. And we sent an ambulance out. She got her finger out. All is well in the world.
I wonder if she got the gizzards, too.
Yeah.
Why get the gizzards? Just get rid of them. Okay. I'm not a gizzard guy. So we do have a comment from Twitter, and this is a more serious question. Are there any texting services for deaf and hard of hearing people or someone who has an emergency where calling is impossible?
Absolutely. We have a voice carryover VCO, and absolutely we have the ability with teletype on our phones to work in text, whether it's someone from speaking in voice to us, or if they're speaking in text to us and they could hear. So we do have and of course it's a federal mandate that occurs. So we, like I said, our technologies are just incredible. You'd be shocked at how good our mappings and things are right now, and they're getting better every day.
And it's quite an upgrade from what you previously described as a glorified living room.
Well, I'm thinking back to 1968 in Haleyville, Alabama, on the first 911 call. It took 11 years for the government to actually get it rolling. I'm wondering if the call came in on two tin cans and a string. But
yeah,
it's a far cry from what it is nowadays.
Do you still remember your first 911 call you got?
I'm a type A personality. There's all types of personalities. And I'm going to tell you, I could, like I said, that big ball. But I was nervous, extremely nervous when I first did it. And my physical makeup is one in which I kind of wear it out, whereas most people in 911, a good segment of them, they can hold it within. But I'm kind of outgoing.
Yeah, so you get your first 911 call and you were so nervous.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't want to mess it up.
I didn't think I could do it. And, you know, you think because I was on radio and stuff, you're very – you think you're capable of talking and dealing with people until you sit down and that split second occurs. It's a whole different ballgame.
Well, I mean, you're really kind of the first responder of
yes.
the first responders.
We're the first responders. That's what we're known
as. The first
as.
Of the first responders. Yeah. So you get a lot of non-emergency calls.
Yes, we do.
What do people do if they aren't sure if they have an emergency or not?
Listen, we treat, like I said, 911. An emergency is an emergency to what an emergency is to you. We always would like them to use 252-9300, if I may throw that out there.
That's the non-emergency
the administrative lines. We also have – there's things like 311 and 511 that are out there. The United Way runs 311. One, it's an informational-based number that people really don't know about. And that's the tough part is actually publicizing, and thank goodness for this show, to be able to publicize the 911 dispatcher's point of view.
Yeah, but things like disabled car, stuff like that.
Oh, we get them all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And they don't call a 911 usually.
They usually call the administrative lines.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, well, I think that's about all I can think of to ask. You got 15 positions open down there.
Yes, we do. And I'll tell you, it's as easy as coming down or actually going on callyoursheriff.org and signing in and just going through the process. The process is rigorous. It can take up to 3 months.
Seeing if you've got what it takes, though.
And it's hard. May I just say a few kind words about your station? I just want everyone private and publicly to really work hard in supporting NPR and – I can't say it enough. I've been listening in Boston at WGBH for years, and I just hope we can continue to support public radio because it's vital information for this area.
And I did not pay you to say that.
You didn't. You didn't.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there for
all
now.
Right.
Thanks so much to our guest, Michael McLaughlin with the Collier County Communications Department. Thanks for taking the time to come in on the show, in spite of being short-staffed even.
Yes.
I really
very short-staffed right now.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our studio director is Richard Chin-Kui, and our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Engineering support today thanks to Mike Stepp and Brad Taylor. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1 WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.